dysfunction? Do we allow people into our lives because we have a deep dysfunction? How do we get emancipated from this dysfunction? And then maybe our eyes are open and then be emancipated from those people who are really have us shackled and chained.
Usually it's ourselves that have us shackled and chained. Just like earlier you mentioned a man forging his own chains.
Yeah, Emerson said we often forge our own chains that bind us.
That's absolutely true. And when you find out what it is, so say you know something's wrong with you. You know something's wrong. When we're talking about dysfunction, you're saying, wow, I kind of have that, or I do that, or I am ashamed of this, or I am broken, but I don't know why. And when you first have to find out what it is, what is holding you back? Because one of the key premises of working to free yourself is understanding that you're powerless over some things. There's some things that you just don't have any power over.
Such as?
For an alcoholic, alcohol. For somebody who's addicted to relationships, the relationship. They're powerless over the relationship. For me, I can't change how you feel. I'm powerless over that. I can't change people, places, things. They are what they are. And it's either I can accept them or I can just keep running into them, trying to change them. And I can spend a whole life doing that, Rhett. I can spend my whole life acting like I'm on a football team and I'm just charging and getting knocked over.
This friend of mine, she was at a house this summer, and she's in the living room. And her girlfriend, who lives in the house with her husband, had gone off to work. So she's sitting in the living room. All of a sudden, the back screen door opens, and then walks these steps. And she's over in this other area, and the lady who walks in is the next door neighbor and doesn't see her. She goes, bum, 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 up the steps. She goes, what's going on here? So she goes upstairs, and that lady is completely naked. And she goes, excuse me, what are you doing here? He goes, I'm sorry. And quickly puts her clothes back on. She comes down and says, I'm sorry, I'm the neighbor. My husband hasn't been treating me well, giving me attention. So I've been having an affair with your friend's husband. And, you know, I'm not really doing this for the sex. I'm really doing it for the attention.
Yeah, that's sad.
Oh, that's the woman giving away her virtue for the attention and love of a male because her husband was neglecting her.
Well, earlier we talked about instinctive needs that were put into us by God. When we were created, we're created with instincts, instinctive needs. So for sex is one of them. For security, emotional and financial security, it's another human need. It's basic to every person you'll ever meet. And for a place in society, that can mean power to some people. That can mean just getting along or not being shy to someone else. These are instinctive needs that all humans have. So that woman, the woman you're describing in that story, she had an instinctive need for her social instinct. She wasn't being recognized by her husband. She wasn't getting attention. That's an instinctive need to get attention from other people. That's how humans are created. So she decided to use sex. She tried to meet her social need using her sexual instinct, and it will never work. It will never satisfy her. It doesn't matter if you have, you know, you can't use one instinct to get another instinct met. Each instinct needs to be met on their own. So unfortunately, extramarital affairs, it's a great example of trying to use one instinct to get another instinctive need met.
Well, supposedly one of JFK's friends came forward now and said that JFK said unless he has an extramarital sex every day, he would fall into a depression.
Well, he was probably addicted to sex. He was probably addicted to sex. And I know that sounds kind of hard to believe, but there are people that are addicted to sex.
Yeah, and then if they go to one of these meetings to get unaddicted, don't they all kind of look at each other and go, hey, you want to meet afterwards?
Maybe you should go.
I'm about to be lonely. Like, I'm going to go to that sex clinic, man, because, like, I'm not that I'm addicted, but I can fake it so I can make it.
Oh, my goodness. Maybe you should go online. Maybe you should attend online work meetings. But I want to talk a little bit about how we're going to get out of this dysfunction now that we have everybody laughing. Because knowing what your dysfunction is, knowing it, spotting it, uncovering it, admitting it is number one. You often need professional help for that. You need to find what's driving your train. That's what I call it. What's driving your train? What's the?
And if it ain't you, then it's bad.
Right. Well,
what should be driving the train? Well, okay, it's always us, but what's a healthy train ride and what's an unhealthy train ride?
Well, most of us wouldn't know a healthy train ride if we saw it. We just keep trying
to work. 90% of us?
Over 90 to 95%.
Then there's little hope for mankind.
But the reality is there's hope for me. I can only work on what's normal for me, what feels right for me.
So a lot of people, like for instance, I know of a guy, he was a doctor. He gets a call in his office in the morning that his wife had gone out with the children. They were killed in a car accident. His whole family's gone. He quietly stands up. He walks out the door, doesn't even close it behind, walks down into the street. 13 years later, he shows up at one of these homeless places to get a free meal, food, and you got to hear the preaching from the preacher first. And this is his story. So the way he coped was just by running, sort of like Forrest Gump in that movie. So when we look at somebody homeless, you know, that may be their coping skill that they just gave up somehow.
I have a friend who's homeless, who's brilliant. He's probably got one of the highest IQs of any person I've ever met. And he walked away from his life and became homeless. And that is how he copes with his dysfunction. And for him right now, that's working. Is that for everybody? Come on, Rhett. No.
Sometimes that appeals to me. I think, you know, I could see myself just like, hey, man, I want to go. I want to spend the summer in the Northeast. And it's either make $1 billion so I'm financially free or not. The total opposite. You can be just as free. Well, you can't. The accommodations won't be as pleasant. But, you know.
That's absolutely true.
You know what I mean?
Right. But so first,
summer's up in north, winter's down in Florida.
But first of all, you have to uncover and admit what's ailing you, so to speak. And then you have to give it time. Don't just run off and give up all your stuff and walk away. That man, the doctor who you described, did that because that was a traumatic reaction. That was not a thought out response. He just was on overdrive. It was like a default setting. He just got up and walked away from his life.
Just like Forrest Gump when he ran in that movie when his mama died.
And because he felt like his life just walked away from him with his family being lost. But you have to give it time because recovering is a process. It's not an event. It takes time. And then if you can, find a support group. And you'll find the miracle of identification. It is miraculous to find people that know how you feel. I can talk to you till I'm blue in the face about being worried about a child, but if you've never been worried about one of your children, you won't understand it. You can pat me on the back and say, I understand, but it's not going to happen.
People who later on become parents, and that child doesn't come home to 4 o'clock in the morning, and they're just shattered, and they go, oh my word, what did I do to my mother when I disappeared for 6 months and never called her?
Right. And after you find this support group and you start working with other people.
I never did that. That was just a made-up story, by the way.
But you have to do the work. You have to do the work. Work the 12 Steps to Wholeness. You can find them at BethWee.com if you want to just take a look at them and see if they'd help you in your life. There's even little video vignettes that you can hear me talk about what the 12 Steps are about. Okay? And expect that you'll feel pain, but know it will pass. And then start rejecting the roles. If you're the fixer, if you're my sister Jeannie, and you're the one who's always fixing everybody's problems in the family, stop. When somebody calls you, say, you know what, I'm not sure. I'm not sure what to tell you, but I'll pray for you. Just reject the role. Let it go. Let someone else help them figure that out. And then rediscover your choices. That's the last thing I'd say to you, is rediscover that you have choices. You don't have to go to every fight you're invited to. You can just put it off and say, you might be right. I'll have to think about it and walk away. It takes the wind out of someone else's sails when they're setting you up to fall back into dysfunction. Just a little sentence. You might be right. I'll have to think about it. Thanks, Rhett.
People want to get in touch with you?
Go to the Beth Wee website, and there's a contact page, and we will get back to you.
B-E-T-H-W-E. Beth Wee. Okay. BethWee.com. This is the Mayor of the Airwaves, Who loves you, baby? We'll be right back.